Okay, welcome again to the second session. Tonight, on our schedule, we have a roadmap of the sitter part one. So that's really what I want to do. We don't have sitters. I guess maybe we should.
I'm supposed to bring
our... It would be good if you just bring... Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks. Great, she's going to bring sitters for us. Thank you. It would be good to bring a sitter, and I recommend bring one that is your own for next time. And either a pencil or post-its.
Well, if you don't have a sitter,
buy one.
Okay.
What would you like to use? I mean, I'm assuming that your purpose for the class is to learn how to use a sitter.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what this class really is about sitter davening.
Okay.
So that's up to you. I mean, if you want to, you could probably borrow one from the shul if you don't want to purchase one yet.
Thank you.
But a note-taking method that I use, especially in sitters or other holy books, sometimes I've written in with pencil, and sometimes I've written in with pen, but one thing that I like to do is use post-its. I get small post-its, and then I can write whatever I want and put it right next to the word, and you can take it off once you remember that concept and it's become integrated into your davening or whatever.
But it doesn't seem right to write in a sitter.
Right, so you don't want to take a lot of notes in it, although it actually, some people have written in their books. And if there's a lot of writing in a book, it can actually be something that's nice for somebody to inherit later on. Because then they see what was important to you, and it's even nice to read your own notes later on. I mean, I find some of my old books that I wrote in, and sometimes I see like what words I was translating then, so I see where my Hebrew skills were at that time, or what was an important point to me at that time, what I wrote in the margin, or what, you know, what connections I saw. Even my Hebrew script, to see how that's developed, you know, over the last 20 years. Because 20 years ago, if I'd write something in Hebrew, it was very babyish looking. And today I write, the letters look adult formed. So it's just interesting just to see that. So it's kind of nice to track your own progress that way in a book. But it depends if you're using it a lot. And it depends on how many notes you want to take. So a lot can get in the way. So sometimes post-its are a nice way to do it, or a combination thereof. So, and depending on how you want to translate words, there's a few ways to do it. One way is just to write the translation right on top, if you want to do that. And another way that I used to do it would be, since I don't want to always rely, I want to train myself to know the word, is I would underline the word and just write a number next to the underline and then make a dictionary in the bottom. So that I would write, you know, just the first underline was a one, and I'd write the translation. So that way I had it right there on the page. I mean, you have it in English here, but in a lot of books that are just Hebrew, that's what I used to do, underline and make a dictionary at the bottom so that you could refer to it, but it wasn't always there, so you could train yourself to remember it. So there's a lot of different ways, but I recommend that you get a book that you could write in some things if you want to. Sometimes you just want to put a little star, bow here, or something like that. You know, whatever you're writing or learning about in the sitter, it's nice to have your own that you're going to be using to be able to write in. So I recommend that you get one. But it's not necessary. You can use just the one that you use in shul can also do the trick for you if you just kind of want to see the gestalt of the whole thing. Excuse me. So,
do most people have their own sitters?
Yes. I say yes. Most people that daven on a regular basis have their own sitter. I would say probably almost everybody that davens on a regular basis has their own. Most people that go to shul and only daven in shul, it's probably a toss-up. Most Jews aren't observant, so you can't say most, because 90% of the Jews aren't observant today. So who knows, you know, what most have. But I'd say most people who are involved and are davening on a regular basis do have their own. Because you would like to have your own, too. There's certain pages that you say, or... And there's also something about passing your sitter on, you know, or having somebody else's sitter. I mean, I know somebody who, on their wedding day, they got to borrow the Tehillim, the Psalms book, of the wife of the Chafetz Chaim. You know, they were friends with the family that had been passed down in the generation, so they had the Chafetz Chaim's wife's Tehillim's, her Tehillim, and they lent it to Kalas on their wedding day that they could say Tehillim from the Chafetz Chaim's wife's Tehillim. That's a special thing, to have your own one that your grandchildren can use, that your great-grandchildren or great-great-grandchildren. And that's why sometimes it's nice to put a little note, too, because they can say, oh, what was she thinking? What was important to her? What did she know? What didn't she know? It's like there's a connection in using somebody else's book, even though the words are the same in all of them. But if somebody used it on a regular basis to make their connection, there's something special just on a vibrational level of using theirs. So it's a nice thing. And the only way it's special is if it gets used, not if it just gets bought. So that's a nice thing to have, to just be able to pass along that way, too. It is traditional for brides to give them a sitter on their wedding day, and it's also traditional maybe for a bat mitzvah girl to get a sitter. So, and actually today, anybody who goes to day school, they usually get a sitter when they're six, in first grade. So, or maybe even earlier. I'm trying to think what comes first, the sitter play or the chumash play. Do you remember? You have grandchildren?
I believe Ramal got the chumash first.
The chumash first and the sitter second? I think it probably depends on the school, but usually around five or six, 1 year is the sitter play and 1 year is the chumash play, where they get their, they're presented their chumash and their sitter in two separate years. So, and that's what they start their davening when they're a kid. And my daughter's was all decorated with all different kinds of things. The parents decorated the cover for it. The mother would decorate it or embroider the cover for it. And then they put little notes all around it, sometimes with paper clips or sometimes glued in, or sometimes an extra prayer glued in, or songs that they learned so that it was their preschool thing, and then through grammar school, and then they usually got something new, bat mitzvah, high school, and then when they're a bride. So there's different sitters for different stages in life. And somebody who really prays regularly will have a small one that they can put in their purse, and a bigger one on the shelf, and maybe a bigger one with commentary that they don't use that often, but they might look something up in, and like that. So I have quite a few different ones that I use. And there's a new one out, in case you're thinking of what to purchase, the woman's sitter. And this is particularly nice. It's an art scroll sitter. So these are art scroll, and the art scroll is really nice because it has a lot of commentary plus directions how to do different things. But the woman sitter is nice because it has commentary that's specific for women. So it'll say, this is a prayer that women don't usually say, do usually say, can often skip, is important for them. Plus it has things in the back that are particular for women. Just extra supplications that a woman might want, has psalms in the back, and additional prayers or supplications of bride on her wedding, or a prayer to be blessed with a child, or to find a match, or for an expectant mother, or a woman going into labor, or Thanksgiving after childbirth, or circumcision, a prayer that one's children go in the ways of Torah, all different things like that for a mother, or a woman, doesn't have to be a mother, but lots of different things that are particular to women, so it's nice to have that.
So that wouldn't follow, you wouldn't use that, if you were sure, would you use that as your, would it follow the course?
Yeah, it follows exactly.
Exactly.
The only thing it doesn't have is it doesn't have the man's blessing in the morning.
And who needs that?
And who needs that in your sitter every day? Why should you have to skip it? You can have your own. So
that is art scroll.
Yeah, that's an art scroll, a woman's sitter in art scroll.
And it comes in colors.
Right, you can get it in white and blue and black and yeah. Right, so, right, you can pick your color, that's true.
You should probably buy it at the Yeshiva bookstore.
Yeah, you can either buy it. She usually has one copy of everything there, and then you can order if you want it in different color or size, because it comes in big and small.
It comes smaller, too.
Yeah.
You can read the small.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right, it comes in the under 40 version and the over 40 version. And depending on... I know. I'm beginning to understand these things at 42. I'm starting to move my glasses around a little. Maybe time for bifocals soon. But I understand it better. And just so you know, there is also the Jewish Guild for the Blind is not just for the blind. They have a large print sitter also. So if you want large print for anybody who needs a bigger print in a sitter, just more pages but bigger print, you can contact them. They're not available in the bookstore, but I think they're available for free or for a very low price if you contact. I think it's just called the Jewish Guild for the Blind. And they have large print. They have large print benches too, nice and big, and you can just see the whole thing for people who struggle with reading it. Okay, that being said, we left us last time talking about a bunch of fours, and I said I'm going to start with that again, because that really is the roadmap to so much that's in the sitter and in davening. So, let's start with... I didn't make one good chart, so I won't have something good to copy, unfortunately. But let's just start like this. So, davening looks like this. And... I'll probably have to erase a lot of times, but there's four different levels. So the top, the pinnacle experience up here, when we get to the top, that is the Amida. also called the Shmona Esrei, which means 18. In fact, there are 19 blessings. Anybody who's making a copy of this chart, let me just warn you right now, make a big one, because there's a lot to write on it. So take a full piece of paper. And if you don't have one, ask a friend for a full piece of paper, because that's really what you need, is a bigger, a bigger piece. Okay, so the Amida is the pinnacle. Also, the Amida and the Shmona Esrei, I'll use the two words interchangeably. The Amida just means standing. Shmona Esrei means 18. In the weekday prayer, there are 18 blessings in the Amida. There's actually 19. The initial composition was 18. There's actually 19 today, but we still call it the Shmona Esrei. We even call it the Shmona Esrei on the Sabbath and holidays when it's actually 7, or on Rosh Hashanah when it's 9. It's just always, it's just generically called the Shmona Esrei, or the Amida, either one. So the Shmona Esrei is at the top. So, let's start with our four levels here. Okay, so the first, back to the levels, four levels of, we talked about the masculine and the feminine, the masculine and the feminine last time. So, what I meant by that was the energy of the masculine and the energy of the feminine, the masculine energy being the energy of causation, the feminine energy being the energy of bringing to fruition. Okay, causation, bringing to fruition. And this is an important thing also. This, in fact, and I'll just say parenthetically, is one reason why, I should probably save this for when we talk about the Shmona Esrei, but I'll just say parenthetically, this is one reason why in the Shmona Esrei we only mention the patriarchs' names, not the matriarchs. It says the God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob. You might wonder, where's the God of Sarah, God of Rebecca, God of Rachel and Leah? It's because the concept of prayer is the concept of causation, because we're involved in a cause, something that causes. We're involved in not acting but praying, and it causes effects in our lives. Our lives are the feminine. The prayer is the masculine. And so really the feminine energy is in our behavior, but the prayer itself is the energy of masculinity, is the energy of causing things to happen. And I can go into that further, but I think you'll get that as we go through. So then we talked about those four different worlds, and this is where these stages all play out. I'm going to try to write them kind of small here. So I'm not depicting God, which is up here. Right, so the first world is, do you want the Kabbalistic words for those worlds again? Okay, so Atzilut, Atzilut, or Atzilus, depending. I wrote it kind of small, I'm sorry, should do a bigger board. Atzilut, the next world is Bria. Bria, this room has so much better sound than last week. Thankfully, Yitzira and Asiya. Okay, so this is the world of action, the world of formation, the world of creation, and the world of spirituality, or right next to ness of God. Yeah. So this is action. I'll write that down here too. Action or behavior, formation, which is distinct from creation. Both of these words could be translated as creation, but we said last week that Bria is a creation that only God can do. It's creating something out of nothing, whereas Yetzira is creation but creating something out of something, like pottery. You create a mug, but you had to create it out of something. And Atzilut, there's not a good translation for, because we don't have that in this world. Spirituality. Or, I would also say here, R-I-G-H-T, right next to ness. Right next to ness of God. Right next to ness. There's not a good translation for that, so I'm just going to call that right next to ness, because that's not a world that we're usually really a part of, but it's right next to God. God being up here, we said that's not even a level that you can count. So next to this, and this is why I told you to make a bigger space than I made here, this is the yud of the name of God. That's the yud. This is the he. This is the vav. And this is the he. So we said that yud and vav are masculine letters, and he are feminine letters. So it is cause, manifestation, causation, manifestation. That's what these levels are. Which we don't have to understand fully right now, just to hear, and you'll see we're going to continue on with this. Okay. So I'm going to erase part of that just so I have the space, but you have this already, right? Yud, hey, and vav, and hey. Now I'm going to put four more levels here. Now I see why they have the spray. Let's see if that works. I'm not used to using boards. Okay, that makes it messy. Maybe. Okay. I'll grab one from over there. That's fine. Okay. So there's four aspects of us as well that we want to engage in prayer. And those four aspects are engaged in one at a time. When we engage them and when we move to the next level, we don't want to move past that thing. We want to bring that aspect of us with, bring it along into the next level. So, who are we? We're first physical. And then comes emotional. And then comes intellectual. Intellectual. And then comes spiritual. Okay, so that's still the yud, the hey, the vav, and the hey. These levels are all the same. Okay, so these levels of us will be engaged in prayer as we move through the levels in the sitter. And the other parallel that we talked about last week is that these four levels also represent the four chambers of the Beit HaMikdash. And when we're going into the Holy Temple, Beis HaMikdash in Ashkenazic, Beit HaMikdash in Sephardic, I go back and forth between pronunciations, so if I say it in a way you don't understand, just stop me, please. So there's the outer chamber. I'll draw a little picture of the Beit HaMikdash here. So there's the, let's see, how does it work? This is the Holy of Holies. Holy of Holies, or the Kadosh, Kadoshim. Kodesh. I guess I should write that in. Okay, so then we have, this is the Ezrat Kohanim. This is the Ezrat Yisrael. And this is the Ezrat Nashim. This is a very crude drawing. It's not exactly like this. Lots of other chambers. But basically, this is what it looks like. You have entrance steps right here. And here, the Levim stood, and there were 15 steps. The Levim stood on the 15 steps, and they sang psalms of praise. And those psalms of praise are all called Shir Hamalot, like we sing before we bench. Shir Hamalot, right? There's all kinds of Shir Hamalot. Shir Hamalot Asayinai El HaHarim, or Shir Hamalot Beshuvat Shem. There's 15 Shir Hamalots. Shir is a song, and Ma'ala is a degree, like Mila. If you ever heard somebody has a lot of Milas, Allah Milas, they have all the good things, all the degrees. But a Mila or a Ma'ala is also a step. So the Shir Hamalots are songs of ascents, songs of steps, the songs that the Levim said on each one of the 15 steps going up to the Beit HaMikdash. So they are songs of ascending. They're actually, I'm just telling you this, you can file it away, they're songs for bringing one out of the depths. Also, if somebody's depressed, that's like the vitamins. So, of course, that doesn't work for chemical depression, but it works for emotional depression. That those are ones to say, and it might be a month-long process, but those are songs that help bring things up. There's actually a midrash, I don't know who was in the last class about midrash. Midrash are not stories that are necessarily true, but can be, and I think this one is true. There's a midrash about the waters that cleaned out the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash was hooked up to a river, and they dammed up the river, and then they were able to open it and let the water flow through to clean it out. Because you can imagine, with all those sacrifices, it was a pretty bloody affair. The place could get messy. So they had to have a way to clean it, and the water gushed through and cleaned the whole thing and went out. But how did they get the initial waters? The initial waters, once they built it, they had to dig down to the waters to hit the well to get the river, and they couldn't dig it. They kept digging and digging, digging there, it just wasn't water. So King David, I guess it wasn't King David, he composed them, but he was dead already. It was Solomon who built the first temple. Somebody said the Psalms that made the waters come up. He said those 15 ones. And they started to gush up, gush, 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 and flood. And I forgot what they had to say to stop it and bring it back down to the right level. They had to be contained. But they did use the Shir Hamalot, the Song of Ascents, to cause the water to come up to the level where it was accessible. So anyway, back to our levels here. So these are the levels that we have in us. And we start out with just being physical creatures. And then think about how we evolve in our life. Right? We start out as babies. We're not even emotional right away. We're just physical. And the next stage that we move into is emotional. Right? A one-year-old, a two-year-old can have a lot of emotions and express them. But they're not yet intellectual. That doesn't start until a little bit later when they start to, you know, in the nose or the whys. The whys, I guess, are threes, right? So that's when you start with the intellectual stage. But they're still not spiritual, right? A three-year-old is not. It would just be straight training if you tell them to say Shema or make a bracha. It's not us. They're not connecting spiritually, really. That's just training. So they're only engaging their intellect, but eventually you raise them up to a place where there is some spiritual. So, and that's each one of us, too. As we have all of these in us, but what we want to do as we're moving through the layers of prayer that bring us up to spiritual, the top part, is we want to take each one of these. We start out with one of them, and then we want to engage it and then pull it into the next level. Not abandon it, but bring it along with us so that we bring each one of these elements into the upper level and then bring them back down. So we want to engage those. So how do we engage these? How do we move through these four sections of the temple, move through these four parts of who we are, move through these four spiritual worlds? It's through the four parts of the service. And there's four parts going up, and then counting number four is number one again, four parts going down. So that's what we're going to look at now. So that's the roadmap that we want to see now, and this is the background for the roadmap. These four chambers and how they work and using them in us. So the first one, and we'll try to look inside the sitter too, but the first one, just so you can understand, is the physical. So the physical section, see if I can more gracefully erase this time. I want to use more of that juice. Okay, so the first one is the physical, and that's the beginning of the day. So the first one, the physical part, is this section that we'll look at that has the blessings, morning blessings. When I say morning blessings, we'll see inside the sitter what that looks like. I'll show you it, so I'm just going to tell you the skeleton here, and then we'll go back and look inside the sitter. The second one, the emotional, our emotions are engaged in song. So that section is the Psukei Dezimra, or the songs of praise. So it's called Psukei Dezimra. Psukei Dezimra. Psukei Dezimra. The next section is the intellectual section, and that is the Shema. To be able to, that's philosophical, to be able to declare that God is one, we have to engage our philosophical self. And say, I am looking at this. It's not about emotions. Our emotions don't discern the oneness of God. That's intellect that looks at something and says, God is unified, God is one, or that we witness something, we're now giving testimony to what we witnessed. That's in the intellectual realm. So that's the Shema and its blessings, which we'll see inside. And then the spiritual realm is the Amida through Tachanun, which many women don't say Tachanun. That's the spiritual. Okay, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4, and then we go back down. 1, so we're starting with spiritual, And then we go back down. So on this, so intellectual for going down out of prayer is the Ashrei Uvalatzion. Pretty sure, yeah. Ashrei. We'll see this inside. Ashrei and Uvalatzion. Then, Ashrei and Uvalatzion. Again, even for regular, for most regular female shachar stavaters, they're not usually saying Uvalatzion. Seminary girls do that. The ones with a lot of time. But that's not general. But you should just know the structure of the sitter here. That's what we want to see, the structure. So Ashrei Uvalatzion is the intellectual on the other side of the mountain. And then the emotional part is back into Psalms. So that's the Psalm of the day, the Shir Shel Yom. P.S. Psalm. How do you spell Psalm? I think that's right. Whatever. I never remember how you do Psalm. I think, you know what I mean. I don't know if the A and the L are in the right place. And then the last one, the bringing us back into the physical, is Aleinu. Okay, so that's the four-part structure of going in and going out of the chambers of the Beit HaMikdash, or going up through the worlds, up into the highest spiritual experience that we as human beings can experience, which is the next-to-ness of God. We can't be God, but we can be right next to God. That's that highest level. That's the Yud of the name of God, the Yud Hey and the Vav Hey name. So we start out, so we'll look inside, but we start out by being physical, that's the morning blessings. Going to emotional, that's the songs, engaging our emotions in the Psukei de Zimra in saying songs of praise. Move into the intellectual, Shema and its blessings. Then from that into the spiritual realm, being in total communion with God, the Amida, the 18 blessings of the Shemona Esrei. And that lasts through Tachanun. Then you're coming back down, Ashrei and Uvalatzion. So we'll see that section inside. And anybody who does daven regularly will recognize that there is an Ashrei here in the emotional part too, on the way up. There's an Ashrei, and the same Ashrei is said on the way down. Here, the Ashrei is said as praise. Here, the Ashrei is said as supplication. There are two different ways of saying the same psalm. But in here it's praise, and here it's supplication. Uvalatzion has in it a parallel to the blessings in the Shema. The blessings in the Shema, and we'll see this as we go along, but I'm just giving it a foundation here. The blessings of the Shema do include a kedusha. They include what the angels say to sanctify God. And Uvalatzion also includes it. So here it's in Hebrew, and here it's in Aramaic. And we say it in Hebrew, in the Amidah, in the Kedusha. If we say the Amidah with the congregation, then it's repeated, and there's a Kedusha that's said too. So there's really three Kedushas if the prayers are said with a congregation. It's interesting that here it's said as in Hebrew, and here it's said in Aramaic. And the reason that the sages give for that is that angels don't understand Aramaic. What? How's that a reason, if you think about it? Okay, they don't understand Aramaic. So, first of all, why do you care if they understand? And second of all, then why say this one in Hebrew, if you don't want them to understand? So apparently, why we care if they'll understand is because we don't want them to be jealous of us. They have a role to sing the praises of God. And we don't want them to be jealous of us. So then, if that's the case then, why should we say it in Hebrew here? So when we say it in Hebrew here, a language that they do understand, here we're just saying it as sightseers, really. We're just saying, oh, and this is what the angels say, because we're going up the mountain. But once we've gotten to here and we've engaged in prayer with God, and we ourselves have engaged in the Kedusha, we've kind of awoken the angels. We've now said the praises that they say. And so now we've gotten their interest. So I guess at that stage, since we're so deeply engaged in prayer, they can't really say anything against us. We are up on this high level. And so we have the right to say what they usually say. But here we've come down a level. And we really can't. And we're not sightseers anymore, but we still want to say it. So we don't want to say it in a way that makes them jealous at all. So now we'll say it in Aramaic. So they won't get it. So that's all I can tell you, because I don't really understand what that just means, what I just told you, what it means. All I can tell you is what I've learned. But apparently, I don't understand how an angel really even could be jealous. That's the truth. From what I understand about angels, they can't really be jealous. So there must be something deeper about that. So all I can share with you at this stage... What is the Aramaic?
Where is the... It's not.
Yeah, I'll show you. Yeah, there is Aramaic. Aramaic is pretty close to Hebrew. You know, Aramaic and Hebrew are kind of like Spanish and Portuguese. Like, they're very close. If you understand one, you'll understand the other, but it doesn't mean you can speak the other. And it doesn't mean you can understand the whole other either. So, but they're very close. So, I'm trying to think if they're that even as distant as Spanish and Portuguese. And I don't even know Spanish and Portuguese well enough to know. But it's a little more different than American English and British English. But they are very related like that. So...
It's interesting that the Shema is really usually the first prayer that's taught to a child.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the intellectual.
Right. But the Shema has to do with mission. Mm-hmm. Why are you a Jew, and what makes you different than every other human being on the planet?
The Declaration.
It's the Declaration. The whole point of being a Jew, the whole point of creation, and that's a whole another class, but the whole point of being a Jew as a subset of humanity is we witnessed God. That's why we're constantly saying this is in remembrance for the Exodus from Egypt. Did you ever wonder why we say that so often? I used to wonder that. Why do we constantly say that? Why don't we say this is in remembrance of something else? This one's in the remembrance of Abraham's journey. This one's in the remembrance of the binding of Isaac. This is in the remembrance of sending away Hagar. Why constantly the Exodus from Egypt? Why not pick a different biblical story? So I didn't understand. It's not just about story. It's about what that story is. That story is God's engagement in history in a very obvious way. It's not subtle. There's no undercurrent there where you could wonder, is he engaging or isn't he engaging? The plagues were huge. They were there for all to see. They were a clear contradiction of natural law. They were there to display God's power over every aspect of nature. That's why there were 10 of them. That's why God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Because he wanted to be able to display his power and his control over every aspect of nature. So if Pharaoh would have let them out after number 4, it wouldn't have done it for what God wanted to display. God had an agenda of display. He wanted to display all 10 so that we could all experience it, see it with our own eyes, and really have it in our guts that God was there. We could see him, touch him, smell him, so to speak, but not even so much so to speak. You couldn't touch God, but you could see the results so clearly that there was no question in anybody's mind what was going on. So that's the role, and that was just for the Jews. The role of the Jew, then, and then we got the Torah. So the role of the Jew is to constantly proclaim, God is here, God is involved. God is here, God is involved. Who is God? God is one. That's our whole role in everything that we do. So every mitzvah is really about that, proclaiming that God is here, and I live my life in accordance with the fact that God is here. So that's why you teach the Shema to a kid first, because their whole role on the planet is to witness the fact that God is one. You might see a million different things about God, a lot of different aspects about God. There's harshness, there's softness, there's sweetness, there's difficulties, but God is one. It might seem like it comes from different sources. You might think you get your income from your boss. You might think you get a hardship from the doctor. You might think that the IRS is plaguing you. Whatever it is, but in fact, it's all from God. It's all one. So that's the role of the Jew, is to think and live their lives to show that God is present and God is one. So that's where the intellect is really involved, but since that's our mission, that's what you teach. That's really one of the first things you teach to a child. And the last thing you say when you die, also. One of the first thing in the morning and the last thing at night and right before you go to sleep and right before you die, because that's our job. Proclaim God is one.
What do you mean by God is one? One that we are God, or what is you mean by that?
That God is one power, that God is indivisible, that God is unique and inseparable. In a sense, solid state. I don't really understand technology that well, but it doesn't have any moving parts. There's nothing you could separate out of God. You can't, even though we talk about God's justice, God's mercy, God's anger, God's appeasement, as if God has emotions, really, that's just our ability to our need to look at an aspect at once. But really, God is everything all at once, indivisible. God is the one who sends difficulties. God is the one who sends goodness. We, only from learning, because I don't think we would necessarily know this just logically, but we know that God is good. So there is a statement, you're just asking me, Gamzu Latova, that we say, this is also for the good. We do repeat that to ourselves, and we say that when something bad happens. We dent our car, Gamzu Latova. We miss a flight, Gamzu Latova. We break a plate, Gamzu Latova. Right? An engagement breaks, Gamzu Latova. Even a miscarriage, Gamzu Latova. Like whatever it is. This too is for the good. This too is for the good. This too shall pass as Gamze Ya'avor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is a good phrase. Yes, this too is for the good. This too is for the good, right? So Rabbi Akiva, there's a famous story in the Talmud. Rabbi Akiva is traveling, and he's traveling on his donkey, and he tries to get a place to sleep in a house in the city, and nobody will take him in. And so he has to sleep in the forest, and he's pretty nervous because at that time there were walled cities for a reason. They were afraid of marauders and thieves and all kinds of scary people. So he had to sleep in the forest. But he figured as long as he's sleeping in the forest, let me write this out first. Gam zu le tova. This is really said together. Gam zu le tova.
It's amazing when you write it out that you really can
see it.
Say it.
Right. Then you can say it. Gam zu le tova. Gam zu le tova. So he's now he has to sleep in the forest. Okay, so he decides to sleep in the forest. At least he has a candle. He can study. So the wind comes and blows out his candle, and now he can't study. So frustrated. Can't even study. And then a lion comes, and he figures, well, okay, at least he'll be able to study in the morning as soon as he's traveling with the rooster. As long as his rooster will wake him up, he'll be able to study first thing in the morning, first light. Then I guess a jackal or something comes and eats his rooster. And he's like, oh, I can't even wake up early in the morning. Then his donkey starts to bray because of the whole thing with the rooster, and the lion comes and eats the donkey. So now he's all by himself, and he's alone in the forest. He's got no light. He's got no alarm clock. He's got no mode of transportation. And he's singing, but he keeps saying, Gamzu Latova. And he wakes up in the morning a little later than he would like to, but then he looks over to the town that nobody had any hospitality from. He sees it's destroyed. And he finds out that a whole band of robbers went through the town and destroyed the whole thing. If he would have been there, then he would have also been killed. So it was definitely Gamzu Latova that he slept out in the forest. And it was good that his candle was blown out because then nobody could see him. And it was good that his rooster was killed because then he couldn't make noise. And it was good that the braying donkey was killed because then he just slept alone in the forest in the dark and nobody knew he was there and he was safe. So that's a famous story in the Talmud. It doesn't always have to be so bad and so dramatic, you know. We often talk about missing a flight. Well, maybe that plane will crash. Well, so Rabbi Israel Tauber said, you know, he was comforting himself one time when he missed a flight to a very important lecture. And he's sitting in the airport thinking, oh, maybe I missed it because the plane's going to crash. And he thought to himself, what am I, crazy? 300 people have to die so that it's okay that I missed my flight. Maybe there's another reason. You know, maybe I just needed to sit next to somebody in the airport that was the right person for me to meet. You know, it could be that too. Sometimes we just need to meet somebody. Or that seat needed to be empty because, you know, somebody else superseded you. A mother who had a lap child really needed the seat that you didn't sit in so they could spread out. You know.
Jewish thought.
Right, you know, right. So that is.
For the good.
That's right. So we definitely believe everything is for the good. So back to God then. We believe that God is good. All right, so your question is, what do you mean that God is one? So when we see bad, part of being a Jew is saying, this all comes from one source. And the one source is good. That's why I say, Gam Zu Latova. Also, this is for the good. That's part of me saying that Hashem is one. That it may seem bitter. Like when we take medicine, it tastes bad, but we know it's good for us. Or we take a child in for a vaccine or ourselves. Go for tetanus if you haven't gone, or whatever, right? It hurts to get a tetanus shot. For 3 days, you're walking around, and every time somebody hugs you, you're like, oh, don't touch. guy's shot, right? But so it's painful, but it's good. That's why we get it. So the pain is part of what it costs for good. So pain is the price sometimes for pleasure, or ultimately we're here for pleasure. That's a whole nother discussion. But pain is the price for pleasure. Pain is not the opposite of pleasure. I'll just say parenthetically on this point, if you think about it, look, what's the thing? Everybody here is a parent, right? So what's the thing that causes you the most pain in your life, would you say? The deepest amount of pain might be your children, might be your marriage, but it might be, and the thing that gives you the most pain is something that's very close to you, right? But it's very likely that that same thing gives you the most pleasure, right? Whether it's a marriage or children can give you the most pleasure. So pain and pleasure, they're not opposites, because if you, let's just say it's children, if you would try to avoid pain by not having children, think of all the pleasure that you wouldn't have. So it's not that pain and pleasure are opposites. Pain is the price that you pay for pleasure. It's a difficult thing. There's pain for other reasons too. I mean, that's not a reason, that's just a reality. Pain is often a price that we pay for pleasure. And the opposite of pain is not pleasure. The opposite of pain is no pain. So the opposite of pleasure, if you're trying to avoid pain, is just no pleasure. Not if you avoid pain, you'll get pleasure, just you won't have pain. So there's another class to discuss. Why is there suffering in the world? That's not for this class. But one thing that we're thinking about when we say the Shema, and one reason why there's different names in the Shema, because we say Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, Adonai, and the Eloheinu, which usually you don't say out loud, but I'm saying for the purposes of education here, that Adonai is mercy, is a merciful name of God, or a name of God that denotes mercy, and Eloheinu is a name of God that denotes justice. So we say those two names, but in the end we say Adonai Echad. What we perceive as merciful, what we perceive as strict, they're both one from one source. We don't have a devil that does this and a God that does that. We don't have a dichotomy in where our things come from. They're one.
So the Adonai is mercy and
yeah.
Echad is...
And the Eloheinu.
Oh.
Eloheinu is justice. And that Adonai is specifically the one that is spelled with the Yud and the Hey and the Vav and the Hey, which we don't pronounce. So we pronounce it as Adonai, but actually, in fact, we do sometimes have the word Adonai also in our prayers, and that's not necessarily mercy. It's the one that we pronounce as Adonai, but is spelled Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey. That one is what's mercy. And that's what's in the Shema.
Just a confusion.
Right. Right. Now, the reason we also say Echad is because we're learning about these four levels, right? The four levels through which Hashem makes things manifest, the four levels of thought, the four levels of who we are. So when we talk about Hashem in those four levels, really what we're saying is Echad. You know, and we see the name Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey, and we say that, those four levels, it's one. Now, I had an interesting experience this Shabbos. I was in Borough Park, and I heard Chazen Miller, he's a world famous Chazen, and his choir sing for the Rosh Chodesh benching. And I never actually experienced this before, of hearing a Chazen, first of all, that I liked. I've never heard this Chazen, so maybe I would like him, but I never heard one that I liked before. And I never heard one with a backup choir, not a choir that sings its own selections, but this choir kind of just mostly sang Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo, Amen, and some oohs and ahs that really backed up the Chazanus of this Chazen. It gave it a lot of depth, but there was a lot of harmony in it too. It was clearly a very skilled choir, and they had a director for the choir, even though it was just a bunch of guys. I found out later it was mostly his sons and a few other congregants. So just guys who gathered around the conductor while the Chazen was singing. And it was fascinating to me. As I was listening to it, I was thinking, there's all these lines of harmony, but the sound is one. And I was thinking, how does music add to the davening experience? In this sense, it's allowing me to hear harmony, which if you would write it out, you'd see the different lines of music, what it looks like, and be able to see it distinct as different lines. And if you hear one person sing it, it would be one line, and another person would sing another line. But when you hear it together, it's one sound. And it made me really think about this concept of Hashem Echad. We could dissect Hashem into many different ways that we experience God, like you would put music on a score. But when you hear the music, just like in a symphony, it's one sound. It's not all separate sounds. All the voices blended. I didn't know who was singing which voice. It was one sound together, perfect harmony. So that perfect harmony of the one sound is really helps you understand the concept of one God. But we could dissect and think about separate parts when in fact it's one, though. So that was just my experience in that shul. I thought it was fascinating just to hear. That shul was in Borough Park. I was in Borough Park for Shabbos. Yeah, this past weekend. Were you there?
Sam was.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. Did you say it was amazing?
It was amazing.
The Young Israel in Borough Park. It was the Young Israel in Borough Park.
Where's Borough Park at?
In Brooklyn.
Oh.
Heart of Brooklyn. It was amazing. I mean, it was a big, beautiful shul with a balcony on top and just stunning. The whole vaulted ceiling. It really looked like a cathedral. I mean, Lahavdil, but it was beautiful, really beautiful. But looking down at all the men, the other thing that was really beautiful is that once a month for this stunning performance and prayer of the blessing of the new month, which is today, in fact, is the first day of Kislev, that blessing attracts so many people. So looking down from above, I saw black hats, and I saw strimals, and I saw crocheted kippahs, and I saw leather kippahs, and I saw black velvet kippahs. And just to see the whole crowd together, especially in Borough Park, in Denver, it's not so uncommon to see a mixed congregation, but in Borough Park, it's very uncommon. You have this kind of strimal here, and this kind of hat there, and the other kind of hat there, and the other kind of fur hat there, and the other kind of yarmulke there. They're all in separate places. But once a month, they come together to hear this because it's just so beautiful.
You said that his sons were in the...
His sons were in the choir. The Chazan's sons were part of the choir.
How many sons did he have?
I think he had like five sons, and then there were a few other congregants. There were about eight men in the choir.
Sounds wonderful.
It was really beautiful.
And where is it located? I have to
go. Yeah, I'd like to know.
Too. Yeah, you have to go.
Do you know the name of the synagogue?
It was the Young Israel of Borough Park.
Flatfoot?
Borough Park.
Borough Park.
Borough Park. Young Israel of Borough Park. Chazan Miller. And his singing sons. It was amazing to hear, really. It was an amazing sound. I definitely recommend if you could. So that would be the Shabbos before a Rosh Chodesh. That's what you need, is to go just for, because that's when he does it. He does that blessing and then the Musaf prayer. Okay, so we did not get to inside the Siddur, but we will next time. But what we want to see, what we did was this basic map then of the going up and the going down, the four levels, going from physical to emotional to spiritual to intellectual to spiritual, and then back down, spiritual, intellectual, emotional, and physical. We'll see that in the Siddur next time. And next time, what's on the list is Sabbath and holiday prayers, but we'll see how it parallels exactly. It's the same structure for weekday and for holiday. So we're going to look at the weekday, but you'll see in Sabbath, we'll just look at the Sabbath too, how it's really the same thing. So we'll open up the Siddur next time and see it inside.
Well, if any notes from next time, I won't be able to be here.
I am recording it.
Oh, good.
So you will. I'm going to ask Rabbi Liban to upload it to the Jewish Experience website, and you'll be able to download it as an MP3 file and listen to it. Okay? So you can ask Rabbi Liban.
Okay.